Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, this seems to be a little interesting this morning. I was awake way too late last night working on the show, right? And I lost track of time, and I realized, oh, my God, I better get some sleep here. And so, of course, I slept completely through the alarm. I woke up 15 minutes ago. So things seem a little bit rushed this morning. That's why. And so, fortunately, I've got tons of material. I got lots of stuff going on. As far as the show today, we've got Jonathan Mosley. And in half an hour doing the legal report, we've got Claire Lopez eagerly, excuse me, anticipated back because she's been traveling and working and doing all kinds of cool stuff. But we really want to hear what her take on Afghanistan is, and that'll be at her usual, that'll be 9:15 Eastern, 8:15 Central Time. So we've got, and of course, Gina's here. Our wonderful producer, world's greatest producer, who probably, you know, has been awake a little bit longer than I have. Literally. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning.
Yeah,
glad you woke up.
Well, it's a good thing I did, yeah. Well, you know, like I say, it's just, you know, I think I'm like, you know, super guy. I can do anything I want. I can sleep, you know, 3 hours and be ready for the show and sleep after the show and things will be fine. It doesn't work that way. But, you know, I keep trying. Anyway, I'm trying to think which story I want to go to first, because there's a couple of ones in the news. The most important one, I think, right now in Florida is the fact that we've got a law that was passed a little bit ago by our state legislature signed by the governor, and now the governor is imposing a $5,000 fine for anybody that even asks you about your vaccine status, and this is going to affect everybody. This is going to affect schools. This is going to affect all the folks that are you know, worrying about the mandates on their job and everything else. It looks like it's over, but it's not getting a whole lot of play in the news. And it makes sense because, you know, the news is all for, you know, the whole vaccine thing. And it's just, it's this weird psychology that they don't want the cure. They do want the vaccine. They don't want to hear the problems of the vaccine. They don't want to hear the good stuff about the cure. It's this total blindness that's going on right now and this obsession. And it's very strange. The real disease is the mental one, you know, the government response, the lockdown mentality, the responsive government thinks that they can do anything and control everybody. And the response of Americans who used to be Americans who never would have stood for this kind of crap, you know, 50 years ago. But now they're, you know, what happened in the 60s? You want to rebel? It's time to rebel. OK, but they're not doing it. They're knuckling under and asking each other, you know, where's your mask? You know, it was a stupid question. I don't have one. Why? Where's your manners? You know, I mean, it keeps going like that. Anyway, I got a couple of different stories here on this. And so which ones should we pick here? News 5, WKRG, WKRG. Anyway, so just one of them here. You know, it says, ask for COVID vaccine proof, face a $5,000 fine in Florida. Now, I'm wondering how many other states will pick this up, because the more that do, the better. This Associated Press AP, so of course it's biased. And I imagine this is the one making the rounds, because it looks like the other story I have. This is from Tallahassee, Florida, AP, app. Florida will start issuing $5,000 fines to businesses, schools, and government agencies that require people to show proof of a COVID-19 vaccination. You know, and even the wording of this. You know, it assumes you should get one. Listen to this, you know, or show proof of a, you know, then they never say, why should you be like saying show proof that you don't have one? They don't say that. It's just the weird assumption that, instead of saying show status, you know, it's just weird the way the psychology, this propaganda, it's always there. Gene, you wanted to say something. I could hear you.
Yeah, I was going to say that brings up an interesting point, because then with Sacred Heart down there wanting all their employees to be vaccinated, technically, mm-hmm. every time they ask an employee, could they be fired? I mean, not fired, could they be fined at $5,000? And also with the, I don't remember who's in charge of this, but the organization that's trying to figure out if they're going to mandate nursing home employees to all have the COVID vaccine or they're going to lose their funding. If by asking, you know, the people that work in the nursing homes, are they going to be then fined $5,000 per person?
I don't know how it works, you know, and because I was trying to find the actual executive order that does this. And what I'm finding in the news and the internet sources is that all they give you is the stories, the endless stories that are the same. They just have different sources. But I couldn't find the actual order. So I don't know.
I like this for the fast HIPAA.
Yeah.
I mean, if healthcare workers, people can get fired for violating HIPAA. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a blatant HIPAA violation by asking someone.
Yeah. Yeah, this goes back to, I think, Senate Bill 2006, which banned vaccine passports and, told the cruise ships you can't, require this kind of stuff. And it's been going around. But as you know, just even if the governor mandates and the legislature mandates that you can't do this, a lot of times it's still happening. There are fights right now with school boards. And so Governor DeSantis is having to withhold the state money that goes to the school board, folks. And so they're still doing it because they've got this this obsession with control, between the masks, the lockdown. Well, I haven't really heard lockdowns for a while. I think California is still under some kind of restriction. But between the masks and the vaccines, it's this very strange psychology. It's like we know the masks don't work. Anybody who looks into it knows the masks don't work. I just saw a story yesterday on why the masks do work, which was total BS, which is weird, but they're out there. And these people are convinced of their self-righteousness, but they're pushing them anyway. Jean, go ahead.
I heard one study was done by Pfizer. They financed it right there. That should be thrown away because Pfizer is so embedded in this whole thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. So they want to push the narrative.
Well,
and
I mean, that's part of the fear. Then
comes out and says you can wear any kind of mask. It doesn't matter. It could be cloth. It could be paper. It can be N95, it can be surgical, it doesn't matter, just as long as you wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but it does matter. There's such a different array of what those masks can do, and most of them do nothing, because when you breathe, if my glasses fog up, the mask is not working.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is I actually tried wearing one of those blue ones for about 5 minutes, and I nearly threw up. I don't know what kind of chemicals are in them, but I got sick to my stomach and almost threw up on the boss of my part-time job. And this is true, right? I'm just making this up. And I said, that's it. I'm not wearing this thing. And he said, well, you have to. All this dictates and stuff. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make it look like I'm wearing one. And I'll get myself a nice cloth one that doesn't do anything, and you'll be happy, and the bosses will be happy, and the cameras, that go to whatever corporate people, they'll be happy too, and just, leave me the hell alone. And so I did the chin thing, except with customers for a while. Never wore one, away from the store. It was just this weird thing. It's like, I didn't want to get fired, but I didn't want to comply either. So I was put in this kind of weird position. So how can I get to the minimum to please these idiots, keep my job? And of course, now fortunately in Florida, you don't have to worry about that anymore. Cause certain places, I don't know what the deal is. Certain places still requiring it for the most part, in this area, in the panhandle here, I don't see a lot of masks, and I see a lot of people with those little looks on their faces. Cause now they're the minority. I mean, people wearing masks are by far the minority. And I'd say it's maybe 5% of the people I see out in public now. And which is down from about, 60 or 70. But there was always a group that didn't. Maybe it's even higher than that during the height of this thing. But the point being that and those that do wear them, they're always looking around like, it's weird. They were kind of like in control at first because they were the majority. And now that they're not, and now looking around like, why aren't you doing what I'm doing? And you look at their faces, they're different. They're almost like you look at them like, why are you wearing a mask? It's kind of strange. So it's the psychology of numbers. And I don't know what percentage it is where people feel confident about doing this, when they're maybe the 60, 70, 80%, they're the majority. And then the 20%, the minority, of course, we were proudly independent. We didn't care. But when it switches around, now there's only maybe 15, 20% of the people wearing masks. Now they look a little, now they don't feel so confident. You can just see them walking around. People are looking at them like, well, why are you wearing the mask? What's going on here? So there's an entire psychology of this that has nothing to do with the actual mask. Because as you say, when Fauci says that cloth ones work as well as, N95 or whatever, he's lying. This is about vaccines. Masks have always been about, I'm kind of taking a long way to get there, but masks are always about vaccines. They always happen. Lockdowns have always been about vaccines. Fear from masks and lockdowns has always been about vaccines and eliminating the cure so people think that there's nothing they can do except get a vaccine. That's where all this goes. This is the weird part about this whole thing.
Right.
Okay, good. Like I said, a little disorganized today. You know, this is my show. Like, okay, Greg, you screwed up. Okay, fine.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah. It's all right. So I'm looking at another article here. Same thing. Looks like the same exact. Yeah. So that's the same exact thing. So it doesn't. The fine starts September 16th. That's what it looks like. And so that's not very far away. We're September 2nd today. So we're talking, you know, 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today this starts. And so we will see. We will see. Then, of course, it has the obligatory government, you know, plug in here for Nikki Fried, who's a Democrat, who's the agriculture commissioner. And says Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried, the state's only white elected Democrat, so I have to throw that in too, and a candidate hoping to challenge DeSantis for governor next year, was critical of the fines. So she gets the big play up. See, AP is totally political. You know, they may have information, but you have to kind of go through it. You know, and so and she says Governor DeSantis is retaliating against Floridians who are trying to protect themselves and their communities from COVID-19. No, you know, it's got nothing to do. He's retaliating against people that are trying to take away your constitutional rights. He's retaliating against people who won't obey the law. When the law is you can't ask a person's vaccine status, you know, you're going to be fined for doing something you can't do. That's how the law works. When a legitimate law is passed and you don't comply with it, you know, a fine is the correct remedy. The next thing after that is jail. You know, that's how we regulate folks who are disobeying the law. You get fined first and then jail. You know, I don't think there's no jail fine in this. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is the idea that the agriculture commissioner, who might be running against DeSantis next year, you know, is right on this, you know, and saying that they're trying to protect their communities. That's insane. That's like the people with the mask mandates. They say, well, we're just worried about everybody's safety. I said, really? Well, what's that got to do with masks? Because they don't work. You know, the disconnect. The term that I've never quite understood, cognitive dissonance. The disconnect of people using this ridiculous excuse. Well, we're just doing this for your, or you have to take a vaccine to protect somebody else. Where the hell does that come from? You take a vaccine to protect yourself. Why would you? You don't protect anybody else. If it protected everybody else, you get a vaccine to like 1 in 10 people, and everybody else would be quote protected. But it doesn't work that way. And if you're protecting other people, why does everybody have to get one? You know. So help me out, Gene. I'm confused. This is a strange world we live in.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and even now, what's finally coming out when they talk about the flu vaccine, how in so many years I had to get it, not per choice, but because I was working in healthcare. And now it turns out that, I mean, we knew all along it didn't do any good because there are so many flu strains, but they mandated it for all these years. And now it's like, and now they say, oh, it doesn't do any good. It doesn't make a difference. So I wonder this next flu season, since we had no flu last year, just ironic, but I wonder if we're going to have a flu season this year. And if so, if we're going to have to get vaccinated for the flu or the flu shot, and they know it doesn't work. They were, you know, they've been saying it this year, and so it'll be interesting. But it's like if you want to get it, go get it, but don't force other people to do it when one, it doesn't do what it's, and two, the people that are pushing it are making, I don't even know, I can't even say millions, billions, whatever they're making off it. So. Nope, I'm like, nope, sorry.
That's okay. You kind of out there for a second, or what's going on?
No, I think, I don't know, my earphone fell off. Oh. That was the only change.
So this is like our confusing morning. So folks, you know, we have all kinds of administrative things that go on here. It's really funny. Like I say, mine today was I just simply woke up 15 minutes before showtime. So I'm still like, oh, I'm in a bit of a fog right now. Actually, one of the best shows I ever did was when I woke up about 5 minutes before showtime, and I immediately I created the episode, plugged it in, went on the air, and just admitted this. I said, guys, I have nothing prepared. Let's just go. Let's just start talking and see what happens. And it actually turned out to be one of my best shows. And so this was a couple of years ago, but it was great. And so
I think that's the best. Yeah. I think sometimes we can overthink things and overplan things and just go with the flow.
No kidding. In fact, I got, I'm looking up something, Jonathan Mosley. He put a post in here about what he's going to talk about. So I'll see, if I can get that amongst little breaks and things as we take them here. All right. Next story that I found fascinating, is the fact that, and this kind of follows up on, what's going on with the FDA and the fact that they've actually promoted a vaccine that they don't have yet. You know, they've licensed something that doesn't exist. I don't even know if that's legal, but this is the comorbidity thing.
I don't see how it can be. I don't see how you can license it when it's not there. What are you licensing?
Yeah, and how do you check the paper? Yeah, and how do you check the ingredients, and how do you regulate what's in it, and how do you determine the manufacturing process, and how do you do all the things that the FDA is responsible for doing if it's not there, unless you're just trying to BS people with yet another story that's not true, that they've created a new one on paper, and they've licensed, you know, this theoretical product which they haven't produced, and this way they can get rid of the millions upon millions upon millions of doses that they have already made under the old emergency use authorization, and people think they're getting the new one when they're really getting the old one. So nothing's changed. You're still getting the old vaccine, folks. You're still getting a vaccine that goes to a strain of COVID, the original one that doesn't exist. So not only is the vaccine, you know, not what it says it is, you know, it's not going to, it's doing nothing. It's actually, and it's making it worse because of the spike proteins and everything else. All right. So the next story I found is from this thing called The Insider, which talks about the fact that speaking of the FDA, two top FDA officials resigned over the Biden insurrection's booster shot plan, saying it insisted on the policy before the agency approved it. So there is a limit to which some people won't go. Because there, you know, as much as I make fun of the government, there are decent people in every agency trying to do a decent job. Now, sometimes I disagree that the agency should exist at all, like the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, because all they do is limit your Second Amendment rights. So they don't need to exist. But there are some folks at the Food and Drug Administration that actually care about food and drugs. And they have principles, and they believe in the regulation. And I believe in them. You know, those are the good folks. They're the ones that end up resigning. The criminals like Dr. Fascist, they're the ones that hang around forever, you know, destroying everybody else's lives, from the people that he killed under the AIDS epidemic because he was pushing the wrong drugs because it made him rich, to the people he's killed under, SARS-CoV-2, you know, COVID-19, because, you know, he's pushing big pharma's drugs to make himself rich. You know, this man doesn't care how many. It'd be interesting to know how many people this guy's killed over the course of his life, you know, from his entire career. And he's still there. But now we got good people who are leaving. And the article says, this is from just a couple, I think it's like yesterday. Let's check my dates here. 10 hours ago. It was pretty recent stuff by Ashley Coleman, C-O-L-L-M-A-N, of The Insider, who says the U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced the resignations of two top vaccine officials on Tuesday, and reports said the two were leaving in anger over the Biden insurrection's plan to roll out COVID-19 booster shots before the officials had a chance to approve them. See, they don't even care, all right? So now, and they probably say they have FDA approval because they got it for this other thing, right? So this is a rush. So obviously, you know, Biden and crew are on the take, or they're being told by Dr. Fascist to do this. So he's not even worrying about approval anymore. They're just going for it. They're saying that the booster is the same thing. Well, apparently it's not. And apparently, if you listen to the other folks like Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Robert Malone, who invented the damn, you know, messenger RNA spike protein infusion, you know, they're saying don't take it. Don't take any vaccine. And these guys are pushing a booster. You know, and if it's so effective, well, here's the healthcare thing. Let's go back to your ballpark, Gene. You know, if it's so effective, why do you need three shots? Nobody ever says, you know, well, your immunity is only good for 6 months. You better, you know, take this to boost your immunity. I mean, we boost our immunity every day, you know, with things that I should be doing, you know, regular sleep, you know, exercise, you know, food and your vitamins and minerals and quercetin and things like that. But you never hear the same thing with your immune system. You know, it doesn't fade away. It doesn't totally collapse. It doesn't go to like 50% after 3 months, and you need some massive infusion of something to get it back up to normal. But these guys, they're pushing the booster, which is more money. And again, if it's so good, why do you need three shots? You know, why wouldn't one work?
Right. Well, even if you would need three after six months, are you kidding me? Then how can it be working?
Good question. That's what I want to know. Anyway, so that's
I can't see how it can be that effective.
Yeah.
If you need a booster after 6 months, how much after a week does it really help? How much after a day? But then it's interesting to know how much damage is it doing to your body. We don't know, do we?
Nope. No, we don't.
And how much more are they spreading coronavirus?
Well, I think that, as we said on the show before, that the vaccine is spreading the virus. It's creating the mutations, which they're calling variants. I don't know why they just don't call them mutations, which is what they are. You know, so every word in here changes. It's fascinating how language is being used. Language is the virus here. Propaganda is the virus. You know, the actual virus is gone, you know, although it is changing forms in people, you know, because of these shots that everybody's getting. You know, if they just left this alone, it would have been gone a long time ago, but that was never the point. Now, what I'm curious about is whether these folks here, Dr. Marion Gruber, the director of the FDA's Office of Vaccines Research and Review, and her deputy, Dr. Philip Krause, you know, plan to leave the FDA in October and November, which is when all the job mandates to do. That's interesting. And this is from BioCentury, first reported on Tuesday. And so my question is, what are these folks going to start saying once they're private citizens again? You know, are they resigning? You know, they should be right before Congress, but of course Congress won't do it because there's too many Democrats there. But, you know, yeah, go ahead.
True. What could they possibly say? But by then, a lot of these places will either have forced people into getting the vaccine because they're afraid of losing their job.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will be too late for them. Those people that didn't want to, I've got a niece in that situation. Well, I've got two nieces and myself in that situation. But my one niece said, absolutely not. She will look for another job. But my other niece is like, I can't look for another job. I mean, she could, but she said, what I'm making now, she said, I couldn't get that very many other places. So she said, I'm probably going to have to go get the vaccine. And in my case, I don't know what I'm going to do. I think I'm just, you know, I will get another job, but it will probably not be in healthcare.
You know, those are choices you have to make. How much is your life worth? You know, people that, I think people face this decision more often than we talk about. You know, construction workers on a bad construction site. Yeah, they might be making money, but what if the boss is an idiot? You know, we don't know how many people have left, you know, bad jobs because they were dangerous. I've left jobs because, I didn't think they were safe. I think people make these decisions all the time, but to hold, you know, your profession over your head and say that your choice is either take this dangerous vaccine, you know, or lose your job, you know, the job is worth it. I mean, your life is worth more. I mean, there are other jobs and you can't see that right now. But we had Dr. Judy Mikovits said this very clearly. It's not worth your health because you can, you know, if you lose your life, you're going to lose that job too. Okay. If you're crippled, you're going to lose that job anyway. You know, if any of these things happen, you're going to take on so many problems. People don't think they're going to have the problems they're going to have. And that's where it ends up being very confusing. I think Jonathan's checking in a little early. And what I want to do is I'm going to bring him on. Then I want to just for a couple of minutes. And then what I want to do is do our piece on Santa Rosa Volunteers on Anti-Federalist number 4. The reason I want to do that now is because right from Jonathan, we're going to go to Claire. And so we're not going to have much time the rest of the show to be able to do this. So I'm just going to do a quick check myself here. And yeah, I thought so. Okay, so that's Jonathan. So let's bring Jonathan on real quick and see if you have a comment on what we're talking about so far. Or did you want to listen for a little bit, Jonathan? Now that I got you on the air. Do you want to listen for a bit or did you want to... comment real quickly. I think I kind of surprised him. So tell you what, let me put him back on hold, let him listen in. He might be away from his phone. That happens. And so what I'm going to do is I want to go over one more story, and then I want to play our Santa Rosa Tears piece, and we'll get to Jonathan at the bottom of the hour. So the third story that I found fascinating from the last couple of days is this one in Forbes and other sources from Adam Andrzejewski. You know, Adam Andrzejewski is a Polish name. Adam Andrzejewski. Do you know how to pronounce it? Andrzejewski? I don't know. We'll see what it is. Anyway, he's the guy that runs Open the Books. He's the one he's the budget watchdog. And I've been trying to get him on the show for about a year. And he's real hard to reach. I guess he's really popular with a bunch of stuff, other sources. Anyway, so he's got this article in Forbes where he says very clearly, Biden administration erased Afghan weapons reports from federal websites. Okay, so this is probably the most fascinating, I think, of the stories so far, that the Biden insurrection has literally taken the weapons that they've given to the Taliban off federal websites. Now, we've already got them locked in. We've got them on news sites. We've got them all over the place. We've been over them on the show. Okay, that's one of the first things I reported at the end of last week was how many weapons we've lost. All right. And so to have this is crazy. It says that the war in Afghanistan has always been a black box, but the Biden insurrection just made matters worse. Okay. I'm substituting the word insurrection, folks, if you're wondering why I'm saying it, because it's a coup. He's not the president. He's just occupying the spot like the political bastard that he is. You know, he's not there. He's illegitimate. And that's probably the best use of that word, because I don't like the other use of it. All right. It says, according to an admission obtained by the admission obtained from the State Department, Biden officials, and I use that term loosely too, recently directed federal agencies to scrub their websites of official reports detailing the $82.9 billion, that's B with a B, folks, that's B as in bozo, $82.9 billion in military equipment and training provided to the Afghan security forces, that's the Afghan army, since 2001. The scrubbed audits and reports included detailed accounting of what the U.S. had provided to the Afghan forces, down to the number of night vision devices, hand grenades, Black Hawk helicopters, and armored vehicles. Reports further quantified 208 aircraft and helicopters, 75,000 war vehicles, including 22 Humvees, 50,000 tactical vehicles, and nearly 1,000 mine-resistant vehicles, and 600,000 weapons, including 350,000 M4 and M16 rifles, 60,000 machine guns, and 25,000 grenade launchers. Just took them off. They're gone. They don't exist. They're the Taliban's now, so we don't have to keep them on federal books. So when the federal government commits a crime, they just get to erase the information. You can't see it anymore. All right. This is the State Department admitted to removing the reports, but justified the move as a way to protect Afghan allies. Oh, that's great. That's like saying you have to take the vaccine to protect everybody else. Okay. It's a complete lie. This is according to a spokesperson, quote, the safety of our Afghan contacts is of utmost importance to us. Yeah, that's why they left them behind, right? The State Department advised other federal agencies to review their web properties for content that highlights cooperation and participation between an Afghan citizen and the USG or the USG partner, and remove from public view if it poses a security risk. Now, Gene, let me ask you, what do you think poses a greater security risk? Giving the weapons to the Taliban or taking the information off websites that you gave, the weapons to the Taliban? Let me just pose that little one for you. What do you think?
Well, it depends on what your outcome is. And I think in their situation, taking the information off the website better suits them and what their alternative motives are. But I would just want a question for you, and I didn't even know this, but yesterday, mm-hmm. and I don't pay enough attention, but I was watching these videos, and granted, mm-hmm. I was watching them on my phone, so you can't, pictures are smaller, but they had these people dressed, the army people, and after they showed the clip, they go, did you recognize anything there? It was like, it's American, soldiers' clothing, and they're, American helicopters, and they're like, but who's wearing the clothes? It's the Taliban.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that. It's fascinating that they're wearing our uniforms. Well, we left, 10,000 uniforms behind or more? left enough to outfit a much larger force. And that's the question I had, too. And we've all been asking this. Why was that much stuff there for 2,500 troops? Why wasn't the stuff brought out when the troops were brought out? So in other words, they just left the stuff there. It obviously means they plan to go back. All right. They plan to restart a war. And then you have Biden come along and give away all the weapons that the deep state was planning to use in the next war against Afghanistan that they were going to cause one way or another. And now they want to scrub the websites of all that information. To me, this is covering their ass. There's nothing more than covering their ass because they don't want people to know how many weapons are out there. But it's too late. We know. Okay. Genie's out of the bottle, folks. We know they left behind enough weapons to outfit an entire army. And Air Force.
And,
all right. Go ahead.
I didn't realize, which this just disturbs me, that uh-huh. supposedly there were young adults there going to college, and they left them behind. Because uh-huh. supposedly when they gave the Taliban people a list of the people that were still there, their names were on there, even though the Biden, I don't even know what to call them, their
insurrection.
They denied, or maybe a few people's names were put on the list. And now it turns out that it was way more than a few. So thank you very much to further help Americans get killed because of your incompetence.
Yeah, it was a kill list. I mean, it literally was the worst possible thing they could have done. And yet that's what they did. All right, let's take a few minutes here. Jonathan's going to join us any minute now again, and I want to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece on Anti-Federalist number 4, which I think the Anti-Federalists are far more fascinating than the Federalist Papers. Let me play that right now, and we'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents.
sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Patrick Henry published Anti-Federalist Paper No. 4, June 5, 1788. He is famous for the quote, "Give me liberty or give me death." Fortunately, he got liberty. Patrick Henry apparently didn't think too much of the new Constitution, and even less, I believe, of John Jay, author of Federalist Paper No. 4. Henry sets the tone of his "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" idea of the Constitution in his opening paragraph, saying, "If we recollect, on last Saturday, I made some observations on some of those dangers which these gentlemen would fain persuade us hang over the citizens of this commonwealth to induce us to change the government and adopt the new plan. Unless there be great and awful dangers, the change is dangerous, and the experiment ought not to be made." Henry pokes fun at John Jay by challenging his basic assumptions that foreign powers will go to war with us if we provoke or upset them, when he says, "It is not sufficient to feign mere imaginary dangers. There must be a dreadful reality. The great question between us is, does that reality exist?" That is the real question. If you have to make stuff up to make your case, and the stuff you make up is rather implausible anyway, you don't have much of a case. One could say that making Iraq safe from weapons of mass destruction, or spending 20 years in Afghanistan was necessary to keep them from attacking us, are similar to the arguments John Jay was making in Federalist Paper No. 4. To further bolster his case, Henry states that it is a fact that the people do not wish to change their government. And the last nail in the coffin of wild speculation to justify the new government of the Constitution over fixing the Articles of Confederation, Henry says, "No government can flourish unless it be founded on the affection of the people. Unless gentlemen can be sure that this new system is founded on that ground, they ought to stop their career. As for the Federalists, however, I believe government over as much as possible was their career. I believe the Anti-Federalists saw this as a massive power grab and wanted to tell the people that the Constitution was neither inevitable nor even desirable, but rather represented a fundamental change in the U.S. government into something very different from the Articles of Confederation, without even considering revising the Articles so that they worked better while keeping the same safeguards and basic operation, but rather instead created an entirely new form of government." Patrick Henry says of the Articles of Confederation, "There is no danger of a dismemberment of our country unless a constitution be adopted which will enable the government to plant enemies on our backs. By the Confederation, the rights of territory are secured. No treaty can be made without the consent of 9 states. While the consent of 9 states is necessary to the cession of territory, you are safe." The last paragraph of Anti-Federalist No. 4 is so brilliant, there is nothing more I could possibly add or say. It was a warning in its time for its time. It is also an explanation for much of what is happening in our time. This may be a radical idea, but what if the next Convention of States considered instead a revised Articles of Confederation to replace the Constitution? It's something worth talking about, if for nothing than to find out what the Anti-Federalists held so dear in the Articles and what caused them to be so repelled by the Constitution as proposed. Here is the final paragraph of Anti-Federalist No. 4 by Patrick Henry. "The Confederation, this despised government, merits, in my opinion, the highest encomium. It carried us through a long and dangerous war. It rendered us victorious in that bloody conflict with a powerful nation. It has secured us a territory greater than any European monarch possesses. And shall a government which has been thus strong and vigorous be accused of imbecility and abandoned for want of energy? Consider what you are about to do before you part with the government. take longer time in reckoning things. Revolutions like this have happened in almost every country in Europe. Similar examples are to be found in ancient Greece and ancient Rome, instances of the people losing their liberty by their own carelessness and the ambition of a few. We are cautioned against faction and turbulence. I acknowledge that licentiousness is dangerous and that it ought to be provided against. I acknowledge also the new form of government may effectually prevent it. Yet there is another thing it will effectually do as well. It will oppress and ruin the people. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. This is Craig Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is SRV176. I always get this wrong. Their website is SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago. That yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. He walks the halls of justice, pictures on the wall of great minds who advance the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial many times that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts. It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley. Oh, another exciting week begins, talking about one of my favorite things, which is why I started Action Radio in the first place, which is the law, and writing the law that make us free from the administrative state that's doing its best to subjugate us under, you know, ever-increasing, basically, communism and Marxism, and that's where we stand right now. So to fight back, here we are, and one of our big weapons in that fight back, of course, is Jonathan Mosley. Good morning, sir. Where shall we go in the law today?
Good morning. It's hard to always hard to know. There's, of course, a lot going on. I wish that Claire Lopez were available to spend the whole time on everything in Afghanistan, but I understand that you're stuck with me until 9:15.
Are you kidding? I love having you on the show. Yeah. No, and it's just, I asked Claire, you know, Claire's one of our other, you know, Thursdays are very special around here between Jonathan and Claire, and I offered her the whole show, but it's a lot, you know. How many people want to do 2 hours of radio with me? It's a long time to talk about stuff, but we easily could fill it because we've been filling entire shows with Afghanistan. And so the title of the show today, COVID, Afghanistan, and our screwed up government. So yeah, that's your ballpark too. So we're going to, go to various things, the administrative state, the Administrative Procedures Act, you know, the systematic screw up of government would be an interesting thing for us to kind of delve into. And then we can take, of course, any individual case that you want too.
Maybe we'll see that there isn't a lot with that. We had wanted to talk about administrative state and a sub-related because there aren't individual cases that stand out. All eyes, of course, being on the disaster in Afghanistan. I should probably avoid being tempted. There's a little bit of news that's somewhat related. Where is it from?
Getting a bit of wind noise from you. I don't know if you're outside somewhere, but we're getting some wind noise.
Let me get back inside. You sent us Hurricane Ida, And we just spent like the last 36 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if it hit you there in the panhandle, but, it clobbered us here bad up on the Pennsylvania-Maryland border.
How
and
strong
I know
are
enough
winds
about,
there?
You know, I grew up in – huh?
How strong were the winds?
What? Oh, extremely strong. I mean, I didn't measure them, but they were – you know, I've lived in Florida. I've lived through severe cold front storms. I've lived through hurricanes. And, you know, this is a hurricane if I ever saw one, even up here in Maryland. And maybe not technically 75-mile-an-hour winds, but it was – we were soaked and everything. So I had a great deal of trouble with getting on the Internet. That's a whole other story. But anyway, so quite a thing. And, you know, there's no global warming, of course, absolutely. So I'd like to talk about, you know, but I can't.
Let me talk about that
just
for a second. So. You raised a fascinating point. This is something that came up the other day with some folks when I hear about this. I want to jump in just because I think this is a critical time to talk about this, that hurricanes are not caused by global warming. They actually take away global warming. People don't understand what a hurricane
is.
That's a hurricane
point.
It's a heat transfer device. The reason the hurricanes exist is to take all that heat from the equator and disperse it up to the colder north. And it's done in terms of – this is how God created the world, okay? It's a fascinating thing, but hurricanes are essential to our climate to keep the temperature stable worldwide. So in other words, all the heat that's generated at the equator, if it stuck there, you'd have ridiculous temperature differentials. We'd have real problems in the world as the functioning climate. But the hurricane absorbs that heat. It takes that heat. It takes it in water because water is very conductive to heat. That heat is transferred as the hurricane moves north all the way up to, in your case, up to Maryland and then out into the Atlantic, which is a lot colder. You've got the whole Gulf Stream moving that way too. But it's a heat transfer device that if not, we would overheat the equators and overfreeze the poles. That's what hurricanes are for. And when people understand that, you realize that it's not because of global warming. It's the cure to global warming. Morons out there.
Although the thing is we don't have the records because we didn't have satellites or airplanes to make a comparison that they're actually worse. But hurricanes are the cure. Plant photosynthesis is the cure to carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. And convection cells in weather – carry the biggest reason why there's no man-made global warming is because when air gets warm, it rises. It goes up. It goes up, and then it radiates the heat out into space. So the more heat, the more convection, the faster, the stronger, the more thorough, So that's why it's like grating on a chalkboard to me, all this stuff. So anyway, it was a bad storm. We got it here, but it was not, I think four people died, which, given day, four people die anyway. And in Katrina, it was 1800 died of Democrat corruption, who skimmed off the money and didn't fix the levees. Anyway, so, which all is kind of related to the administrative state. So I'm going to give you a brief course on administrative law, which is intensely political and comes a great deal from the Constitution that you were just referring to in the Federalist Report. And I like that. It's like if somebody is showing a sign of liberalism, administer two doses of this recording quick. But this all goes back to the question that and really everybody needs. I know we're busy and everything, but we really need to be readers and listeners and learn about our our founding period, not just as a bunch of cliches or symbolism, but really understand that they were grappling with these things. Our founders went back through all of history to see what did different countries do. I mean, they were well-educated, and they also looked specifically for the purpose of designing our system. Mm-hmm. What did other countries do throughout history? Where did they fail? What went wrong? What went right? And the issue of you have a king. And, of course, when you have a king like King George in England, really you have all of these, advisors and things. The king was probably out hunting, and the advisors are scheming and manipulating and calculating and
bureaucrats
saying to the king, here, sign this.
Yeah, power is always in the bureaucrats.
It's gone on. So the thing is that what kind of government should we have has always been a gigantic struggle and intellectual debate in our society. So one of the things here, and this came in during FDR, is the idea that we should, and remember all these great abuses, Nazism, Soviet communism, and all these people, they always pretend to be scientific. Same thing with medical. You know, it's always the tyranny of the self-proclaimed experts. The Nazis insisted that they were following scientific ideas. Of course, they weren't any more than COVID today or anything like that. But they sold it as, you know, this is the best way because it's scientific. You go back and read their nonsense. It's all about that. And so in the administrative state in America rising up during the same time period in the Franklin Delano Roosevelt years was the same kind of thing. We want experts running. And I remember I spent 5 years inside of the U.S. Department of Education, so it's kind of hard for me to talk about this with a straight face. I know people. And they were, you know, we want the experts running things. We want it to be non-political, which means we want it to be liberal/communist because they control who gets in there. But we want it to be apolitical. And this results in the fact that our government, in their theory, and the dominant theory of today, we want the executive branches to be independent of the president. Now, you will recall, of course, that the Constitution creates the office of the president.
Mm-hmm.
None of the departments are mentioned in the Constitution, not even the Department of Justice. There is no attorney general in the Constitution. The only thing is maybe the Treasury, I think. There's Treasury and Department of State are obliquely referenced. But all of these government, it's all invested in the president alone. Now, obviously, he can't do that without hiring. I mean, they knew that he'd have to hire helpers. He couldn't, you know, sit there and sign papers for all the thing all day long. But the power is exclusively invested in the president, in our Constitution. We've gotten to the point where we saw with Trump, and I don't know if people, I mean, to me, I don't know if people caught it because I learned it. I mean, I went to law school and I was, you know, it burned my toast. I had a hard time getting through a day in law school without being furious reading this nonsense. So to me, it jumped out at me with the impeachment and the idea that he's not allowed to talk, you know, the president's not allowed to talk to the attorney general about pending cases. You know, darn straight he is. That's his job. The only law enforcement officer mentioned in the Constitution is the president. But the idea that he would talk to the Department of Justice about a pending case was considered impeachable. In fact, it's horrifying. He's not supposed to do that. The prosecutors are supposed to just do their own thing, accountable to no one. And that's the idea, is that the executive branch agencies are accountable to no one because they're supposed to be apartisan, nonpartisan, which is, you know, like, to my mind, it sounds nice, but it's impossible. It's like a world without sin, short of paradise. It's appealing in its idea. It's just not possible. And so the agencies are supposed to be nonpartisan. That's why we talked about last week about how President Trump came in and just reversed policies.
Mm-hmm.
And under the Administrative Procedure Act, he said, no, you can't do that. And then Biden has come in and done the same thing. And some courts are slowly starting to say, wait, you can't do that either. We talked about some examples where, and everybody would normally think, well, of course he's the president. That's what we elected him for. If he puts forward a policy agenda and we elect him as president, we think he's going to implement his policy agenda, right? I mean, of course he can change the policy. He can issue an executive order canceling the last guy's executive order. But the whole administrative state idea is, no, you can't, because, and I'm not agreeing with that. I'm just explaining this gigantic war of political philosophy that's going on, and nobody's really paying any attention to it. Although during the confirmation hearings with Justice Kavanaugh, they did mention his support for what's called the unitary executive, which is a scholarly difficult word for what I just talked about, which is that the president is the president and all power is invested in the president on the executive side and anyone he chooses to hire to help him. That's called, you know, in a very hard, you know, very obscure term, the unitary executive theory, which is the constitutional theory, which of course means it's bad in the liberal land. And I think the real reason why they made up all that stuff about Kavanaugh is they were afraid that that he didn't believe in the administrative state, that he believed the president is the president. And we haven't seen any evidence of that since Kavanaugh took office, maybe very little. But but that's the war going on. It's because now the left, today at least, they know how to manipulate the executive branch agencies. So severing the executive branch agencies from the departments and from the president means the left controls the United States. But I don't know if that's how it started out, but they seized on that advantage. So that's the thing. So they created this Administrative Procedures Act, which tells the agencies what they're supposed to do. And that's where they create, and it's one of those horrifying things that's infuriated me in law school, is, you know, what is the basis for regulations? There's nothing in our Constitution about, you know, the Congress passes law, mm-hmm. the president signs them or vetoes them. What gives an executive agency or department that is not even mentioned in the Constitution the power to create law in the form of regulations? Well, the Administrative Procedures Act supports the idea, but mostly they just made it up. And they made it up under the idea that, well, the Congress left holes. You know, they did a sloppy law, and so we don't know how to implement the law without filling in the gaps. And so theoretically, the regulations are that Congress didn't tell us how to do this, so we're going to have to use our expertise and our knowledge in the subject matter. Again, I'm choking on, you know, laughing, having met some of these people. But they're supposed to use their expertise to fit the law to the real situation, and they issue regulations. And the regulations have to go through this process. They have to get public comment. They have to announce things, although that doesn't really, you know, they have to ask for all this public comment, which they can then promptly ignore. But they have to go through this long process. It takes like a year and a half. And then they issue a regulation, which becomes the force of law, unconstitutionally, but supported by Administrative Procedures Act. And one of the things is that if they then turn around and change the regulation, if a new president comes in and says, no, I don't like that regulation, the presumption is that these experts came up with the best solution based upon their expertise and their subject matter and their department, and they considered the facts and they considered the ramifications, and they developed this regulation justified by you know, what's best under the circumstances. And you come in next year and you say, oh, I want to do something different. Like, well, wait a minute. You supposedly made the best decision based on facts and evidence and expertise last year. How could it be different this year? And there's a famous case, Chevron, I forget who it's versus, everyone just called it Chevron, and different Supreme Court precedents saying that if it's arbitrary and capricious, it's invalid. So that's where Trump just came in and his lawyers did a terrible job, and they didn't lay the case, you know, lay the foundation why they needed to change things. I think they finally figured it out later and eventually got it. But early on, all of his policies were being blocked because they didn't demonstrate why it wasn't arbitrary and capricious, why the change was needed. For example, we've been doing this for 20 years. It doesn't work. So a change of circumstances requires us to do something different because, yeah, 20 years ago, we thought this was a good idea. We tried it. It's not a good idea. So we have to do something different. So the regulations cannot be changed by an arbitrary and capricious change, just, you know, because, again, we have this myth that the experts are in a nonpartisan, egg-headed, you know, philosopher king, you know, great minds sitting around in the faculty lounge thinking about things. They came up with the best answers, and they studied the facts, and they know things. So that's the basis of the regulation, and therefore the president has no power to just come along and make a different decision. Again, it's all part of this gigantic philosophical war. And again, back in our founding period, there were all these different theories, as you can see in the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, is the theory between, you know, they were debating, and, you know, there was they called it a faction, not a political party, but there were the Federalists and there were the Anti-Federalists, and they were fighting about these things. You know, how should we run our government? And so there's been this gigantic war in the 20th century between the president has all the power and the president has no power. the bureaucrats have all the power. And, you know, that's what's really going on. I mean, when I say what's really going on, there are probably 100 things that are really going on, but it's one of the big things that's really going on. And we're not, you know, nobody's really telling the American people about this gigantic war going on. I mean, the people, like when they talked about Kavanaugh, they know what's mm-hmm. going on in Congress and everything like that, but they don't let the people in on it. So I've been filibustering. Yeah. What do you think?
No, I mean, I just been letting you go because I'm absolutely fascinated. This is the best description of the administrative state I've ever heard. And so this is why I love having you on the show because, you know, I love the way your mind works. And just to be able to lay this all out in such an organized fashion, I'd love to hear you in trial sometime. It'd be quite amazing to see how it goes. I've got a bunch of notes here, but it's, you know, and a whole bunch of things come out. We'll get into the wind noise again a little bit there. The whole idea of this, it's like the administrative state, the bureaucracies of their own little kingdoms. I've been talking about this for a long time. And although I took some of what they were doing when I wrote my bill for the budget, you know, so that any budget item over like $100 million, I just picked an arbitrary figure and it's probably too low, but it would have to go through a 30-day comment period. I got that from the regulatory procedures. But the state, this independent state is, as you say, a leftist communist. And so anything that goes, you know, the communist presidents like Obama use it to advance their cause. You know, it's like the EPA was donating huge amounts of the fees and the money they collected to environmental groups that were pushing the line on global warming. And then climate change.
Right.
You know, you have administrative judges that say, well, you can't get rid of DACA, even though we know DACA, the illegal alien kids. The judge said you couldn't get rid of that because Obama put it in. Therefore, you know, you can't take it up because it's arbitrary and capricious. That's the rule they use whenever they want to remove something. So you've got, you know, this war. It's fascinating the way you talk about that because, you know, like I say, I've got a bunch of different things down here. There's abuses on both sides. There's abuses when the president says that the president can absolutely do, you know, foreign policy. That's the job of the president to make up foreign policy. No, it's not. Now, as I understand the Constitution, the Congress makes the laws and the president is the executive who enforces them, but the president cannot, you know, do anything outside the law that Congress made. So in other words, every executive order has to be within the authority granted the president through the legislation. Now that changes, and we have all kinds of things where presidents are declaring wars and keeping us in, and then Congress approves later. That's a problem. We have the administrative state, you know, which basically does things. They make up regulations, and unless Congress, you know, disapproves, those go into effect. I would reverse that, and I would say that no regulation takes effect until Congress votes it through and is signed by the president. That makes more sense, you know. But within the law that's already existing, the president and the regulatory agencies can operate within existing law as long as they don't exceed existing law, making up their own authority, just like the Supreme Court, which is mentioned in the Constitution, you know, except they didn't mention the inferior courts that Congress could create. But the Supreme Court, where judges or justices serve, you know, for terms of good behavior, means they can be recalled by Congress, you know, I guess for the president too. I'm not sure, you know, where that goes. But anyway, they're not lifetime appointments. Yet that's what the administrative state has tried to convince people, that these are lifetime appointments. Even the three from the Federalist Society, which, as I reported earlier, is funded by all kinds of liberal folks like I think Amazon and Google and Facebook fund the Federalist Society, which comes up with our Supreme Court justices, which is why we have such failures in Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. You know, it's the state, the power of the state to rule what's arbitrary and capricious, to use it when it benefits them. So the communist left uses the administrative state when it benefits them and gets judges to say, that's arbitrary and capricious, you can't do that. But in the same way, they let Obama do anything he wanted. He basically made up law, which presidents can't do. His agencies
yes.
made up law, which they can't do, backed by judges who were leftist communists, you know, who backed it up saying, well, that's the way it's supposed to be. The president has that power. So it's a convenience. You know, Trump was impeached out of convenience. Hell, they took a poll for the last one. They just said, well, who wants to impeach him? That's not law. You know, that's you want to talk about arbitrary and capricious. The last impeachment is the epitome of arbitrary and capricious. So the state is used by the left however they want. And the problem is that the conservatives, independents, patriots, you know, and the Republicans don't know how to use the administrative state. What they should be doing is dismantling.
Well, we don't try. I mean, I don't completely understand it because we have some smart people on the right, but it's an attitudinal thing. I mean, you're not going to learn how to do something you don't want to learn how to do. And you're
not
going to do something you're just not interested in. And so the left uses every tool that is available. They study it. They learn it. It's their religion. It's their Bible. And they make the money. whereas the right tends to completely ignore all of that, and we have this somewhat of a quasi-religious background, I think, that this idea that if your intentions are pure, God will fill in the rest. You know, so it's like, well, I meant the right, I didn't say it well, but I meant it, so that should be okay. And, you know, I haven't done my homework. I haven't studied myself to show myself approved. I haven't learned anything. But, mm-hmm. But you know, I'm doing God's work, so that's good enough. It'll all somehow come together. And,
is that why they're so lackadaisical, you know, about everything? They just sit back and just, you know, that, I mean, they don't know what
know.
They should be
that's,
doing.
That's my –
I think you're onto something.
It's a complete guess on my part, but I just noticed – Being in learning to be a Christian at the same time I was learning politics, I just noticed the similarity.
Oh, that's interesting.
I was at the Heritage Foundation where they have lots of events. People come together and they talk, and I just thought that, you know, the idea was, you know, they would make no effort to say things well. They would just, you know, say that, you know, like I described. I think that they said, well, if my heart is in the right place, it shouldn't matter if how I say it. The truth will come out. And unfortunately, that's not the way the world works. But anyway, so the left studies these things and the right mm-hmm. doesn't. And so any tool, any mechanism that's out there, the left is going to be advantaged because they care. Government is their religion. For us, it's an inconvenience while we, you know, get do our insurance business or stockbroker business or something real.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a hint that it bends. But anyway, so DACA is a perfect example of where there was no basis for it originally to become law. It was done in violation of the Administrative Procedure Act to create DACA. But then to undo it, the court said you can't undo it without following me, even though it was never done properly to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in all these things, the courts are complicit because they know, you know, which side their bread is buttered. And, you know, they know Congress is going to make noises and, you know, what they really want to hear. There's too many Republicans and Democrats who want DACA for the courts to take a stand against it. So they will take the absolutely ridiculous position that something that did not follow the Administrative Procedures Act to be created has to follow the Administrative Procedures Act to be terminated. And again, this is partly
that's expediency.
Because,
yeah.
Well, it's expediency. It's also because it's like the part at the end of the movie Spaceballs where Rick Marano playing Dark Helmet says, you know, evil will always win because good is dumb. And our lawyers, you know, we didn't do our homework. We didn't lay the groundwork to say, here is why this change is justified. You know, starting out with the fact that the thing is illegal to begin with.
Yeah.
So we kind of hand, you know, the courts are complicit, the left is complicit, but we kind of hand it to them on a silver platter as well. So... You raised something else that I was going to – now I'm bloviating. So what was I
– Oh, no,
the other thing that you –
Well, the whole – I don't know, because I mentioned a whole bunch of things. I mean, the whole idea of the administrative state is fascinating to me in itself because it becomes its own government. And like I said, the left uses it for their things when they want to, and they use it against conservatives, you know, they don't want. But
well,
conservatives
well, let me,
have got
let me
a
say, it,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, let me say this, because not only is it their own government, but they think that's right.
Yeah.
They don't think they're getting away with something. They believe that that's the way the universe should run, and like how they're horrified that you would disagree. It's like the bureaucrats should run things, and what's wrong with you if you don't think that? So it's like
yeah. How can you question science?
Yeah.
How can you question the science?
And
well, it's easy. It's
how
not
can
science.
You science them.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
so,
really good on this.
And so they kept saying that. Yeah, I mean, they kept saying, and I was listening to this because I'm, you know, familiar with this stuff. Over mm-hmm. and over and over again, all the witnesses on the impeachment kept saying that, you know, that they want the. And I think they almost did put it in the article of impeachment. I think it was mentioned in there that he didn't follow, that Trump did not follow the foreign policy of the United States, meaning the bureaucrat. He is the foreign policy of the United States, along with, like, Congress is supposed to declare war, although it doesn't. But their thinking was he is committed impeachable offenses because he didn't listen to us, the bureaucrats.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, we decided what the foreign policy would be, and they say this with a straight face, like they can't understand. If you think that's crazy, they don't understand. They're like, what do you mean it's crazy? They just don't. I mean, they really believe that that's the way the world is supposed to run. The diplomats, the unelected diplomats, are supposed to decide what the foreign policy of the United States is, and not just that they would prefer it that way, but that Trump should be impeached because he didn't listen to us.
He messed with the primal forces, Ned Beatty said in Network. You know, Howard Beale. You know, let me tell you the way the world is.
Yes.
You know, and Ned Beatty is one of the greatest speeches ever made in a movie. Yeah, it's fascinating that you've messed with the primal forces. You've upset the balance. It's not, you know, there's not nation states anymore. There's it's money. You know, it's shekels and drachmas and dollars and, you know, kroners and everything else. And this is the currency. This is how this whole thing works. You know, it's a fascinating thing, the way this is all going. But what you've hit upon here that is something that came up with impeachment that I was watching too, and I'm watching Binman and this other woman with the red hair, I forgot, the State Department people, and they said, well, we've already decided this. We've contracted our people in the other governments. In other words, they'll talk to each other. You know, so our State Department people talk to their State Department people in Ukraine and wherever else it is, and they've already agreed on a policy, and this is the way it is. So what Trump did was basically irrelevant because they already had their policy. They'd already decided exactly as you said. I've never heard it expressed so clearly, but this is exactly what's going on. And the same thing happens, over in the bureaucrat side. They've decided. Fauci decided. And he decided with Obama. They had this pandemic, you know, playbook that they gave to Trump, which they knew he wouldn't do, but that's how they structured the whole coronavirus task force and organized the lockdowns and the masks and created the fear that created the vaccines, which everybody's getting rich on through royalties, licenses, and everything else. And this is this whole big government industry. And so to them, that is their industry. And conservatives don't see government as an industry. Like they say, like you said, they see it as it's a means to an end. We have to serve for a while. It's our civic duty, yada, yada. But the left sees it, that's their industry. That is their growth. That is their entrepreneurship. They're entrepreneurial government people. And I never thought about it until you just had mentioned this. But that really is how they think. And our State Department counterparts, like I say, talk to theirs. And Claire's on the line now, too. So I want to investigate this further with her. But this whole connection, you know, and the same thing as Patrick Wood, who was on the show before. Patrick Wood has a website called Technocracy, and he talks about how the technocrat bureaucracy, the combination, the scientists are running things, like you said, starting with Nazi Germany and every state before it. I mean, I'm sure ancient Rome said, well, we're just following the science, you know, Cicero, what's your problem? Why do we talk about independence for? The science is that people like to be ruled, or whatever they said in Rome. I'm not a big historian. I wish I were, but working on that. But, you know, this is what's so fascinating about going through the Federalist Papers, and especially the Anti-Federalist Papers, which I've never read until now. And I'm realizing all the conflicts that there are and the things that they were talking about then and the problems that are arising now because of what, you know, and they say, this might happen, and they were absolutely right. The last one I just did was with Patrick Henry, who wrote Anti-Federalist Number 4, you know, against John Jay, who went on to become Supreme Court Justice. He's an elite. He thinks that to rule by the good, you know, Plato's Republic. We know what's going on. Shut the hell up and listen, because we've already thought about this. We thought it through. You don't have to worry about it. And that kind of arrogance, that kind of, you know, it gets transferred into the state. This is why I said, you know, we should have term limits, you know, in the bureaucrats. I don't care about the Congress people. They already have their term limits. They have elections.
Yeah.
But the bureaucrats need to be terminated. I would fire everybody over 30 in the federal government and start over. You know, I mean, just if you want to do a blanket policy,
well, they
get rid of the entrenched, because they have their own empires. They are dictators of their bureaucracy. They are kings of their bureaucracy.
When I was in the U.S. Department of Education, most of the people who worked there in the late 80s, early 90s, had been there since Sputnik. They were hired during the Sputnik pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this one person was 80 years old, and she just puttered around. They didn't pay any attention to her. She didn't really do anything. That was the job.
How do you know what she's doing? Yeah.
Well, she would just go around muttering, and they would ignore her. They didn't have the heart to fire her. But you know, that's why I talk about these experts. So, but people have been there that long in one place. I forgot the other thing I was going to say, but – yeah, so that's the problem, is that is that, oh, I was going to say that I think in earlier millennia, mm-hmm. they would have called a similar concept the philosopher kings. And I use that to mock these people today because they think that they're educated, which they're not, and they're experts, which they're not. And therefore, they should have the right to tell everybody what to do on COVID, on global warming. And the thing is the priesthood of experts is crashing, and they're furious. I mean, they're just like, well, you can't do that. We're the experts. And, you know, back then, and they mocked it then, too. But the Plato and Aristotle, who I think would not necessarily have wanted that themselves, but they would refer to as philosopher kings in the sense that we're the philosophers, so everybody should do what we say. I think that's part of the problem. Go ahead.
Well, it's like the longer these people are in power, the more they're convinced of their own self-righteousness. And like I was saying, Patrick Wood has this mm-hmm. fabulous website. He was on the show, and he talked about technocracy and how every state, every country has their fascists. Every country has these people that are entrenched in government. And even Star Wars made fun of them. You know, oh, the bureaucrats are going to take over now. You know, when they had that big scene what's her name? I forgot her name. Anyway, she's the woman that plays, you know, Obi-Wan's. Anyway, I'm getting my names mixed up. But the point is, they have this huge scene where all the different nations of the universe are gathered, and you know, they're all sitting in the little circular flying saucers. And then it's just now the bureaucrats take over, you know, so the president can't make any policy. And again, the bureaucracy is the weapon of the left. They use it when it suits them. And when it suits them, you look at the health bureaucracy. It suits them to rule our lives. I mean, they are absolutely believe not only should they control, you know, everything to do with health, but they should also control the entire economy. I mean, what the hell's going on with this moratorium? I mean, at least the Supreme Court did something right. The CDC does not have the power to tell people they can't be evicted. And the fact that people actually believe because they said it, it was okay. The CDC only has one power that I know of, and that is to keep people with obvious symptoms of a communicable disease at our border and not let them in the country. Other than that, I don't think they have a function. I would get rid of them because it's not anything that any other state agency couldn't do or, you know, because, but the damage that they have done, the power that they have usurped, the empire that has been created around the CDC and the FDH and the NIH also. But these health bureaucracies that want to rule everybody's life, that dictate, you know, who can do what in the economy, which businesses are essential. You notice not a single government agency was declared non-essential during the entire COVID thing because the administrative state is the growth industry. The administrative state is their entrepreneurship. The greater the power of government, the greater they feel they are. Whereas a conservative looks at it, I think this is, what you said was absolutely brilliant, but the conservative looks at growth industries as actual industries. You know, things that produce goods and services, but to the left, the government is the industry. It is the cause. It is the career, and what their growth is power. Their currency is power. You know, whereas the conservatives' currency is money. You know, and I think that's the difference that they actually think of power as a currency, and then they trade. You know, they value how much power they accumulate, whereas the conservative might value how much wealth they accumulate. Their wealth is their power. It's a fascinating philosophical revelation, you know, going on here.
Right. Let me say, like the CDC is an informational agency. It's I'm trying to turn my speakerphone off. It's not they're supposed to study things and report. But to the leftists, there's no distinction. Any government agency has unlimited power. So if we have a government agency, well, surely they should have the power to order things that are vaguely related to whatever they're doing. But that the CDC is supposed to study things and report to the government and the people. That doesn't mean they automatically have the power to force you or prohibit you. It just means that they study disease and the NIH as well. But the left strips the gears. There are no guardrails for the left. They cannot. I mean, they're spoiled children is basically what they are. So if you say no, you can't do this. They throw a temper tantrum. But I wanted to say one of the things throughout history, why the philosopher kings and the self-proclaimed, and you know, Annette, let me tell you, I spent a lot of time in Washington. Many of these experts, including the young conservative people, they're experts just because they've memorized the talking points, not because they've actually studied the subject matter. The problem is that the general population believe them. You know, when we start saying, no, look, we want to look at your underlying information, like with global warming.
Mm-hmm.
You said, like we tell you there's evidence. Like, well, can we see it? Well, but no.
Trust us. We're the experts.
You know, so when we stop listening, you know, when we stop being in awe of these people, that's when it will come back to normal. You know, it doesn't mean that experts don't have a role to play, obviously.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's the idea that because I'm an expert, I should have the power to order society, to, you know, order society both in the sense of organizing and commanding. You know, so that's the, I mean, I'd like to consider myself an expert, but it's this instinct that the citizens have to sit down and shut up and just do whatever the experts tell them to do. Like you say, it goes back thousands of years.
Yeah, I can see that we're going to have a conflict, and this is part of why I think Action Radio, the timing of Action Radio is absolutely perfect, because the citizens are ready, the energy is there, people are not trusting the experts unless they actually, say it can be verified, that people are not, you know, and I wish I could give, I got Claire on the line, I'm going to get to her in just a second, but I think that, you know, we really need to give conservatives a course in government as to what power really is and how it works, and get them to actually stand by their convictions, which I think is the other big problem. It's like you take a look at any Republican now who's complaining about Afghanistan, they're complaining about the budget, they're complaining about everything else, but every one of them voted for Biden in the January 6th insurrection. And I'm talking about the Biden insurrection, not the Capitol Hill walk-in. I'm talking about when they came back, they all voted. You know, there was no, they didn't even vote to continue the next day. They didn't even object to the fact that every challenge of every state was suddenly gone because of this, you know, this staged event going on in the Capitol. And so until they get the balls to actually do something, there's not called the Gelding old party, because until they actually start participating in government, until they actually realize that they do have power and better start using it, this is where the void's being filled by us at Action Radio. And as we grow in popularity and people realize, we're going to write the laws for you, because we're going to give them to you, and we're going to see what you can do with them. And if you're going to, you know, if you screw around, you don't do, you know, what the folks consider the right thing to do, then, you know, you're going to be gone. It's going to be that simple. If you don't pass laws that increase our freedom, you're out of here. Let me play something real quick. We're going to get to Claire. This is just, Jonathan, you've outdone yourself today. This has been fascinating.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
That will go to the second of our dynamic duo of Thursdays with Jonathan Mosley and Claire Lopez. Claire, boy, this has been a fascinating hour. Feel free to jump right in and on your take on the administrative state from your perspective. And, of course, we have the rest of the time. We can talk Afghanistan. Jonathan, stick around. Gene, you know, Gene's our producer now. Feel free to join in anytime. And let's keep going. Claire, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
So you've been traveling, you've been working, you've been doing all kinds of things. I don't know if you want to fill us in on that a little bit, or just leap right into the administrative state, or Afghanistan. You know, your choice. Where should we go?
Well, traveling and a bit under the weather, but improving now.
Okay, good. Oh, that's good. All right. Well, let's take a big dive in. You know, I was hoping. Well, we're going to talk more and more about this as the weeks go by, but there's so much going on. My contention with Afghanistan is that. Everybody says this is incompetent, this is an accident, this is, you know, how could they be so stupid? I don't believe in accidents. You know, I've always had the belief that there's a purpose behind it, but unless you ask the right questions, you're not going to get the right answers. And I look at this in terms of Obama running things behind the scenes, and I've talked to you, you know, off the air. I'm trying to find out who really is the power behind all this, but it looks to me like Obama, who has a long track record of bringing Sharia Muslims into our country who don't believe in our system to overthrow our country, basically, and change the vote and change everything else. Somalia, Somalis in Minnesota is a perfect example. I don't know how many Egyptians were brought in when he was working with the Muslim Brotherhood, or how many Palestinians were brought in, you know, when he was doing what he could to overturn Israel, you know, but, you know, or how many ISIS folks were brought in when he was running guns through Benghazi. But this is a record. This is a track record of Obama, because all the Afghanis came out first and the Americans are still there. That can't be an accident. And the second part of this is the arming of the Taliban. You know, they say we can't nation build. Well, Obama just built a nation. He built a nation for the Taliban. He's armed them to the teeth, you know, with our stuff. Nobody leaves behind $82 billion worth of stuff. That's one-tenth of the entire defense budget for a year. And the other question is, what was it all doing there in the first place for 2,500 troops? So why would you leave stuff to outfit at least probably 100,000, you know, person army, you know, when you've only got 2,500 troops there? Why wasn't the stuff coming out when the troops are coming out? So I've just got a gazillion questions. So feel free, just leap in anywhere. But I think those two things, the Afghanis here and the weapons left behind, was completely purposeful. I think is probably a good place for us to start. Claire, what do you think? Am I onto something?
Well, I don't know that it was purposeful. I think we have some of the most incompetent leadership in the history of the country in diplomatic intelligence and military positions right now. I mean incompetent to the point that they don't belong in government at all, never mind at the levels they're at. The only possible good news about that hoard of weapons, well, first the bad news, the first cut, the first choice, first dibs, will go to China and Iran, maybe Pakistan, to take what they want. But what remains, I mean, if there's any sliver of, you know, a silver lining to this cloud, it's that they won't be able to maintain the equipment. They don't know how to maintain it, and they won't be able to get the parts. So it'll probably break down in fairly short order. I had thought that some of that equipment was disabled, but I can't seem to get any answers about that. How much of it may have been or not, I can't get an answer, although I've tried. But perhaps some of it was disabled. Don't know. They did stage a parade. The Taliban staged a parade with some of that equipment in the last few days, showing it off. So obviously some of it works at the moment. But you know, they're seventh century savages. They're not going to be able to maintain this stuff.
Interesting. And you know, it's interesting when we're talking about the parts and the maintenance. And I thought, well, how long will it take me to find a Black Hawk helicopter manual online? It took me about 30 seconds. You know, there it is.
Yeah, but that's the same thing as being able to read it.
That's true. But I know that, you know, it wouldn't take long for Chinese and Russian helicopter pilots to come in and back engineer it and figure out which buttons are similar to their buttons and which, you know, systems you turn them on and see what they do and just take them all apart and see what happens with them. You know, I don't know how they do it, but I'm sure there's a way to hack into the software, you know, in your typical Black Hawk helicopter. I think Iran had this when the Shah was kicked out of Iran. They had all kinds of either F-4 or F-15 aircraft in the United States, and they maintained them for a while. But as you say, eventually they couldn't maintain them, and we certainly weren't going to give the Ayatollah Khomeini, I think was the one in power then, you know, the means to maintain their F-15s. So they gradually, you know, went out of service. But with China and Russia in there, I'm sure they still have enough technology that they know how these things all work anyway. They're getting all the refinements. They're getting all the latest gadgets from night vision to encryption
stuff. China and Russia are not stupid.
Right.
They are not going to be maintaining the Taliban. They'll take what they want as first dibs on the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, to reverse engineer it, study it, whatever. But they're not going to be in the business of supporting and propping up the Taliban.
Okay.
Pakistan is, because, of course, Pakistan's ISI, the intelligence service, created the Taliban. But China and Russia, not so much.
Well, you just dropped a bombshell. I think we need to explore a little bit further. You may have mentioned that before, but you just said that Pakistan's security forces created the Taliban. So let's find out what really is the Taliban once again. Let's define who they are, because that might put this weapons thing in perspective.
The word Taliban actually means students, plural. Singular is Talib. Talib is one student. Taliban is plural students. And after the chaos of the war against the Soviets in Afghanistan in 1980, the Soviet Red Army departed, and the warlords, who had been united more or less, kind of, sort of, to fight against the Soviet Army, now fell to fighting against one another. And it was total chaos. And the cities were being bombed and decimated, and people were dying. And so what happened is that the students coming out of the madrasas of Pakistan and Afghanistan, the border area populated in large part by Pashtun, spans both sides, and there's really no border per se, the way they look at it tribally. But out of the madrasas then, came these students who absolutely know nothing except Islam. They don't study, anything, mathematics or science or history or anything else, only the Quran and Islam. They come out of the madrasas with a mission to reestablish order in Afghanistan, and that's basically what they did. They became the Taliban, the students, and they brought order back to Afghanistan by bringing the warlords under control, and the warlords, many of them, joined the Taliban, and that's where we get the Taliban, which eventually, of course, gave harbor to Al-Qaeda, which also did not exist in the 1980s in Afghanistan, but formed later, and that was the lead-up to the first 9/11.
Yeah, this is fascinating. So did Pakistan maintain control of the Taliban they created?
It's not so much control as it is a relationship, I would say, a relationship of sponsorship and funding and training and alliance. And that does continue to this day, yes. I mean, Pakistan's a jihad state.
So when we were fighting this war, it's almost like I'm still not clear exactly what we were doing. Initially, I just understand it was to, stop Afghanistan from being a base of terrorism, which makes sense, except that all the 9/11 terrorists, or most of them, are from Saudi Arabia. But I don't think that's necessarily
that
the problem.
You see.
Yeah. Oh, they weren't. Okay.
Those hijackers that were 15 out of the 19 Saudis were, in fact, recruited by Imad Mughniyeh, the terror chieftain of Hezbollah, on orders from Iran.
So if we really wanted to stop terrorism, we would actually go after Iran and let Afghanistan just do what they did best, which is kill each other, which they've been doing for how many thousands of years?
Iran is certainly the head of the Islamic terror snake, yes.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to my favorite theory, that Obama is behind the scenes of all this, and that through Valerie Jarrett and Susan Rice and, to a certain extent, Kamala Harris, when she's not, the party girl, they're really the power behind Biden. So it's almost like they want this white face for America, being the racist that they are. And they really, it seems like they've done everything to advance Islam. As you said, that Barack Obama is a Muslim because his father was a Muslim, and he can't get out of that unless, I guess it's the death sentence, to remove yourself from the Muslim religion. So it makes perfect sense to me that he would boost the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, the Palestinians against Israel, run guns through Benghazi to arm ISIS, and in this case, create a nation for the Taliban by dropping all these weapons up. This all seems purposeful. And in fact, Gene and I have been talking about this. Gene, feel free to jump in anytime if you want to, join our conversation here. But this seems to me that that's where the real question for us lies. I don't understand how the Middle East works. I don't even know why it's still called the Middle East. It's kind of like west of us here. I think that's the old British term for it. You got the Far East, you got the Middle East. I mean, Britain sort of defined the world, it seems to me, in the terms that they used. But if Pakistan or Pakistan, as Obama would say, created this force you know, in Afghanistan, then that is where the problem is. And if Iran, you know, as you say, and I believe absolutely that they were behind this, and as you say, you've reported on what happened in Benghazi, you know, you were on the commission, you know, that we're after the wrong people and going to war against the students. Now, the madrasas are the schools, right? That's what they're called, or the universities?
Madrasas are schools, are Islamic schools where they study the Quran, yes.
Okay, kind of like our government schools where they study Marxism? Is it similar kind of indoctrination?
Not more severe. Exactly, no. It's much more religiously defined. It's run by clerics. It is strictly a curriculum of Islamic scripture, doctrine, law,
mm-hmm.
a memorization of the Quran, rote memorization, whether you know the words you're saying or not, that sort of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking in terms of the level of indoctrination. In other words, the point of indoctrinating Americans is so they forget how to be Americans and learn how to be good little Marxists, in the same way that the madrasas are going to indoctrinate people in Islam so they learn how to be good Muslims, you know, and not think about anything else or even have any other thoughts enter your heads. So, you know, I still have trouble with the – and Jonathan, please, I want to get you in here too. But I still have trouble with the idea that these people are so incompetent. I mean, you just don't leave. I mean, there wasn't a single general that said, wait a minute, you know, a lot of stuff there. Why don't we just take some of it out? Or we've got Bagram Airport. As Trump was saying in a recent interview, the runways are 8 feet thick. Yeah, it was the most defensible airport, I guess, and was strategically it's placed in a place where we can get to a bunch of other places really quickly from there. You know, and why wasn't that secured, saved? And you know, it's just like I don't think people could be as stupid as they were because this was all foreseeable, unless it's being ordered by Biden. People are just blindly following because, well, he's the president, or so they say. It just doesn't make sense to me. Claire?
I agree. It doesn't make sense, but I think we underestimate the incompetence of our leaders right now.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking room temperature intelligence, IQ. These people are unbelievably unqualified for the positions they hold.
Is that part of the plan too? Is it the left plan?
I think it's just the way they run things.
Jonathan, you got experience in these bureaucratic agencies, you know, Department of Education, stuff like that. How stupid are they? And do they reinforce stupidity? Or do they promote, you know, compliance and just, you know, I always feel like when the Democrats are in charge of anything, it's like children. You know, like we said before, that you get the worst possible people. Then the adults come in, like under the Trump administration, you had adults. You had Mike Pompeo, you had, you know, decent people, Peter Navarro, you had adults. But they didn't know what to do because they lived in their little bubble and they didn't get rid of all the children and all the bureaucracies that were still existing. Jonathan, can you help us out here? He's not there. How about Gene? Looks like your line just came live.
I was going to say the reason, or could be, is that he got yes men in there, anybody that will agree with him. And why do they do that? For a very many reasons. Sometimes it's just to have the job, the position, because it makes them feel like they accomplished something, or it's like, oh, look at me, I got this title. But I just don't understand how certain military people would agree to it. And supposedly now there's some that disagree, but I don't get it myself. It's crazy how just the decisions that were made and what they said months ago, oh, everything is okay and it's going to be smooth. It's like, I mean, anybody, you could have even asked a kid, I don't think they would have thought that same way.
Claire?
I mean, I think everybody knew exactly what was happening in Afghanistan. Everybody knew where it was going. Everybody knew what was going to happen. They just didn't want to talk about it. The American people may not have known because, you know, they don't follow things in that level of detail. But the leadership, they all knew. The government all knew. The think tanks all knew. Everybody knew.
Yeah, and that's the crazy part about this is that we've talked about this, that, you know, you can only maintain a presence there for so long. Sooner or later, we're going to have to leave. We've been saying this for 20 years. And, you know, when we do leave, the Taliban's going to take over. And we talked about that, what, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago? And you talked about how ever since it was our government that approved the Afghan constitution, including Sharia law in it, that really it was lost. back in 2004, I think it was. You know, whereas
that's
initially
right, yes.
they, yeah, yeah, yeah. So given that, given the fact that they'd already had a constitution that violates everything that we believe in, what was the point? What was the point of
well,
us being
I,
there
you
beyond
know, I don't
that?
Want to in any way diminish the heroism and the professionalism and the sacrifice of our military men and women who served over there these 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Those people gave their all. They were fighting. They were working. They were trying to establish, you know, something that would be workable in that country. That's what they were there for. But they didn't realize they're at a different level, you know, than the leadership, which was of a completely different mindset, never really understood Afghanistan or Islam or jihad or Sharia at all.
You know, I've never said anything against the people that served there. You know, God bless them. You know, they did what they thought was the right thing to do. They, you know, they served, they came back, you know, they lost limbs, and it's like, it's okay, it's a sacrifice, I was fighting for my country. I never have a problem with the people that serve. My problem, as always, I think most places, is with the leadership and the lack of leadership and you know, General Milquetoast, you know, who's running the show right now, that they just, they, you know, where are the officers who knew this was going to be a disaster? And, you know, just kept them on anyway. That's what I don't understand. They just kept the policy. There was not enough noise made, at least not overtly. I mean, maybe they said something, you know, in the back channels to Washington, like, you can't this. This is incredibly stupid. I mean, is there any record of any of that happening?
Well, not that I know of. But you're getting something that connects with what you were talking about earlier. And that is that, The industry of war is an industry unto itself. I mean, how do you get more shiny stuff on your shoulders? You have to have combat command. Well, how do you get combat command? You got to have a war someplace, right?
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be so cynical about it, but this is the way it works. And there was no interest in actually crushing, totally crushing and destroying the enemy. I mean, think about what the United States military and some of our fathers, my own father, my uncle, did during World War II. Absolutely crushed, flattened the Nazi Germany the European theater and the Japanese, Imperial Japanese that were the Pacific theater, right? And then not only crushed them, completely destroyed, unfortunately, I mean, the entire countries that we're talking about, but take Japan, what mm-hmm. happened next? Douglas MacArthur goes over there and oversees not only the abdication of the emperor, who is considered a god,
mm-hmm.
but then the entire revamping of the administration's civil and educational system in the country. The textbooks were all rewritten. And look at Japan today, thriving, modern, democratic, representative, an ally. Okay? That's how you prosecute a war and finish a war. In Afghanistan, for example,
mm-hmm.
those warlords we've been talking about, you know, the Gulbuddin Hekmatyars and all the rest of them, the Haqqanis, everybody knows where their compounds are, where their villas are, where their opium stashes are. By the way, an opium stash doesn't degrade very much, and it's kind of like their bank account. You go pull some out when you need more money. Everybody knows where these are.
Mm-hmm.
But for 20 years, those compounds have stood. They should have been turned into parking lots 20 years ago, but nobody ever touched them. Nobody ever decimated the opium trade, which was the financing, remains the financing of the Taliban and the warlords. Nobody ever went after any of that. Why not?
Well, it sounds like
knew how to do it.
Yeah, but that was a war. This is an industry. And I've heard from, and you can probably shed some light on this. Then we got Tom who's calling. I'll get to you in just a second. But the industry is, just as Jonathan was so describing, the administrative state, where I'm sort of thinking to myself that government is their growth industry. Government is their power. Government is their entrepreneurship. And the more power they accumulate, that's their currency. You know, and it's like here the currency is money. I mean, literally is money. You know, that the more arms they can create, the more war they can prosecute without actually winning it, the longer they can extend this, you know, the more money they're going to make. Now that we've given away $82 billion worth of military weapons, equipment, everything else, then that's going to have to be replaced. And all those people that made that stuff is like, hey, they probably got their hands out already to Congress saying, well, you know what, we need to appropriate some more money to make more weapons because we just lost $82 billion, which is like one-tenth of the entire defense budget for a year. This was never intended to be won. It reminds me of Vietnam. Vietnam was never intended to be won. It was just intended to keep going. You know, did we lose something in our...
We have forgotten how to decimate an enemy. We have forgotten how to completely and totally obliterate an enemy.
You know, I think you're right. It's like, you know, the Vietnam War, we could have gone in, you know, settled it, gone out. The Afghan War, it basically was solved in the first, 6 to 8 months? I think that the Taliban was destroyed. It's like, but then we don't do, you know, what we should. We don't finish the war. We revive the enemy to the point where we can keep fighting them, just keep them strong enough or make them strong enough that they're always an enemy. It's like you never win. And I think, you know, when Trump played that patent speech that George C. Scott made, you know, how Americans are, you know, the quote of George C. Scott, Americans love winner. It's like we've forgotten how to be winners. Vietnam, I think, really destroyed so many things in this country. We're still suffering under that, that wars are meant to exist. They're not meant to be won. And, you know, but what would it look like? Let's paint a quick picture here. What would Afghanistan look like if you were in charge of the Afghanistan war, if you were Secretary of Defense? How would you prosecute, end it? How long would it take? And what would be the end result? What should it have looked like?
Well, I have no qualifications to be Secretary of Defense.
Oh, come on. Speculate.
That's
come on. Take a guess.
One of the first things that I think should have been done way back in the beginning was to take out every last one of the warlords.
Okay.
I mean, destroy the base of power in the country, all the warlords, all their compounds. I don't care if they're goats there or not, all their opium stashes.
Mm-hmm.
Dismantle the opium trade completely, and then help them write a constitution that actually gives the people and not to Islamic law. That constitution was a disaster, and it's been the law of the land of Afghanistan ever since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been written very differently if I had anything to say about it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about Japan. If we had done with Japan what was just done with Afghanistan, we would have given Japan the entire, you know, Pacific fleet and said, here, you know, we're leaving. You're on your own. You know, this is so disgusting. Let me get Tom, his new caller here, to Action Radio. You're on with Claire Lopez and Jonathan Mosley and Gene Ferning, our producer, and, of course, me, you know, playing host here. Tom, what would you like to add to our conversation?
Well, I have a different theme, but long-time listener, first-time caller. So
okay, well, thank you. Welcome to the show.
I recently went to a bar, and inside the bar there was sort of a memorial or a table that was set up and with 13 beers.
Right.
And that represented the Marines that were killed. And mm-hmm. and so since your forum is pretty open there, I was wondering what you thought about a march on Washington, you know, similar to the ones that were presented for George Floyd and some of the other people. And this would be Marines killed under Biden's watch. And maybe
so,
October Columbus Day, peaceful, no weapons, nothing like that. But, you know, just the outrage that our Marines were killed and we learned nothing from, as your host is talking about, is we learned nothing from Beirut, where, you know, our embassy was or our place was bombed by a suicide bomber, and we had the same problem here in Afghanistan. So we didn't learn anything in that time. So I was thinking, you know, some sort of memorial that that we could you could organize or have organized to your listeners or plant the seed to see that if anybody would be interested in doing that.
That's a good question. I'm going to put it to both Claire and Jonathan and Gene as well. I'm not a big fan of marches. I mean, it rallies the people and people get excited, but I'm much more of an action person. So this is why I have Action Radio writing citizen legislation, because I think there's a lot more potential for concrete action as opposed to a march. I would want to know what your theme would be, where you'd want to march to, and what would you be trying to accomplish with that. Is it a change in policy? Is it, just to get as a memorial for the people we lost there? You know, what do you want to accomplish with it?
Well, just the outrage that we left people behind and we shouldn't have, and that the Marines were killed under his watch, and it shouldn't have happened. And, there's a lot of reasons, a lot of speculations that happened. I don't know where or who. I don't know what – I don't even know, how to accomplish that type of thing. But just
– Okay.
You have a
no, it's good. It's perfectly valid. You know, like I say, there are marches in Washington for a bunch of stupid things. We might also do something good. Claire, what do you think? Think that would have an impact on policy?
Well, I mean, I will tell you, I think Tom is absolutely right about the sentiment of the American people across the country. The anger and the frustration and the realization that our leadership now, our government is in the hands of not just complete incompetence, but people who simply do not care for the people, about the people, about our military. There have been a lot of memorial services, I'm happy to say, in many places, in many restaurants and bars, like the one that Tom was in.
Oh,
where
all
they
the
set up the table with 13
them.
Glasses of beer.
Yeah.
So the sentiment is absolutely spreading across the entire country, a great disillusionment, even among those who voted for this administration. They're realizing that they probably made a pretty big mistake.
That's something we need to talk about as well. I guess they call it the buyer's remorse. The folks but they were lied to. I mean, and to me, I would feel completely betrayed. Just the outright lies that have been told. I mean, the whole election's a lie. I mean, Biden, didn't win. I mean, we know that. The audits are going to show that. But the fact that this compounds it for me, that not only was this a horrible decision, not only did we lose people for no reason, we lost it from somebody that has no right to be where they are to even give those orders. That's the part that galls me more than anything else. Jonathan, what do you think? Think we could, and which group would organize a march like this? Because I think Tom's absolutely right. We're all furious. The question is, where to put that fury and what's going to be the best result of it. I think, Jonathan, we just lost him. All right. Gene, do you have a thought on this? I'm going to bring Gene in the conversation here in a bit. All right.
I think it's a good idea because, one, it gets people involved, but also lets people realize, because the mainstream media is now covering things as it really is. So they maybe only give a 30 seconds, but at least let them know, just keep putting it in their face that, yes, this wasn't right. And I feel so bad. And have people march and not look at their watch to see what time it is because they have
you don't wear watches,
else to
yeah. That was sickening.
Devastating.
Tom, that's the image that people have is of Biden sitting there with the caskets arriving off the airplane at Dover, and then all he's doing is like five times I think he looked at his watch. I mean, what could be more infuriating to the American people?
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. And I have served overseas, and it's not an easy place to be. I'm touched by the memorials and some of those Marines who were killed were 1 or 2 years old when the war started.
Yeah.
And so they gave their life, and it's again we're idolizing thugs and naming streets after thugs and I was wondering that maybe turn it around and see if there's a voice that would be interested in supporting our war fighters.
Well, that's something that, you know, you raise a good point. The left uses racism to get their political objective. I call it political racism, which is accusing somebody of racism to obtain something that you couldn't, you know, another way, just through guilt. So George Floyd was the martyr, was the cause, was, you know, white people bad, black people good. You know, it was this whole, you know, way to make folks feel guilty and try and get, you know, the police defunded. You know, it's insane, but that all that attention was artificially generated because under normal circumstances, we'd be horrified. It would be a news story. There'd be an investigation and then, you know, the proper trials and, you know, things would go on in normal due process. It didn't work out that way. It became a worldwide, you know, movement. So in the same way that, you know, George Floyd had a worldwide movement, why don't, you know, we had 13 people we lost for no reason through utter incompetence, as Claire is describing. You know, why doesn't that deserve a march? But conservatives don't do that. You know, the patriots, the conservatives, the independents, the libertarians, they don't do that. They don't march in the same way. And I don't know if you get enough people to do it, to motivate the Republicans to do what they're supposed to do now, which is the follow-up investigation. That's what I talked to Claire about. So Tom, the best advice I can give would be to contact a group called Bikers for Trump. You know, it's some of the most loyal pro-American, you know, groups you're going to find there in Washington. I would start with them. You know, those are the folks that ride to the rallies. You know, I know some of the folks down here in Pensacola that belong, you know, in the Pensacola chapter of Bikers for Trump, but I would contact the national Bikers for Trump. You know, these are the folks who used to roll in every year, you know, the Harleys that went to Sturgis and all that stuff. You won't find a better group of patriots in the country. I think a majority of them are probably veterans. Now, did you serve in the forces, armed forces yourself or no?
I did not serve in the forces, okay. But I did go overseas.
Okay, interesting. All right. Claire, what do you think? My ultimate goal with the march that Tom's talking about would be to have the inquiry into Afghanistan that is so desperately needed, but I don't think it's going to happen because, as I say, I've been calling the Republicans the gelding old party for a while because they're incapable of doing anything, you know, for our country. I don't know what they're doing. They're just there. You know, they're taking up space and going along with the Democrats. Say, I don't think that inquiry that should happen, you know, is going to happen. But if it did, what would it look like, Claire? What would the inquiry be?
Well, I mean, there are some few Republican leaders in Congress that are calling for some kind of hearings. Of course, without being in power, they can't call hearings themselves, but
right.
They can hold the equivalent of hearings as the minority party. But you know, we'll see where that goes. There have been calls. I've heard them for investigation and hearings, but I don't know if that's going to ultimately, you know, lead to anything or not.
Yeah, I've long called on like the House Freedom Caucus to hold their own hearings, and whether or not it becomes, you know, an official record, at least getting out in the public record would be enough of a, you know, of a thing to do. All right, Claire, we've got about 10 minutes. Oh, actually, about 8 minutes left here. Can you, you know, put on your fortune teller hat, do a little, you know, look into the future. Given what we have now, given we have an armed Taliban, we have Russia and China who are going to want the various minerals and resources and pipelines, and they're going to use the Taliban as they see fit. Given that we have a completely incompetent and, as far as I'm concerned, illegal, you know, occupant in the White House and his whole government, given that the Republicans are incapable of doing anything for our country these days and haven't been since, since Reagan, as far as, you know, in a movement, because they didn't even like Trump. Where are we going to go? What do you see happening in the next, you know, short term, medium term, long term, as far as you can think this through? Where are we going to have problems? What's going to happen with Afghanistan?
Well, with the exception of Saudi Arabia, which is no longer part of this equation, and with the addition of the Islamic State, people, by the way, stop calling it ISIS. There is no ISIS.
Okay,
ISIS ceased to exist in 2014 when in Iraq and al-Sham no longer applied because they were worldwide. It's been Islamic State ever since. Stop calling it ISIS.
Okay.
Islamic State, new addition to the equation, this Khorasan group, basically where that arose from, I don't think people realize this, that's the al-Qaeda branch in Iran, which now has a presence alongside of the Islamic State, which, by the way, arose from originally al-Qaeda in Iraq, right? So a natural realignment there. But with those exceptions, you've got the exact same parties as in the 1990s before 9/11. You've got the Taliban. You've got Al-Qaeda. You've got Iran. You've got Hezbollah, which, by the way, if folks don't know, has been training the Taliban continuously since the 1990s. Okay? Hezbollah doesn't do that on its own. It does that on orders from Iran. So we've said Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Iran, Hezbollah, and, of course, Pakistan, plus, you know, the various groups, warlords, the Haqqanis, for example, which aren't Taliban, but they're aligned with them. All of them are now forming up again. Not only them, preparing for another 9/11 is what they're doing.
Okay.
Under Iranian leadership, most likely. But you have an opposition forming. I don't know if people realize this, but in the Panjshir Valley, which is to the north of Kabul, there is an opposition taking form, and leading them is the former vice president of Iran, Amrullah Saleh.
Of Iran or Afghanistan?
Among, pardon?
Is it Iran or Afghanistan, the vice president?
No, these are Afghans. Afghans.
You said Iran,
in the Panjshir Valley,
yeah.
And also among them is the son of Ahmed Shah Massoud.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Ahmed Massoud. And that opposition is forming up in the Panjshir Valley. Not all the tribes, not all the different ethnic groups of Afghanistan, the Tajiks, the Uzbeks, the Hazara, are aligned with the Taliban, with the Pashtun, who form the majority of the Taliban. They are not. But it's reverting back so much similarly to what we saw in the 1990s. So I would say keep an eye on the Panjshir Valley and watch Iran and its alignment with the Taliban.
Yeah, I've heard about this. I wasn't that familiar. Like I said, the reason I interrupted was I think you said that it was the vice president of Iran. I think you meant Afghanistan because I've heard about this person.
Mistake. Yeah. The vice president of, or former vice president of Afghanistan, whose
right.
name is Amrullah Saleh, is in the Panjshir Valley.
Yeah. Now, given that the Taliban have all the weapons that we so conveniently left for them, can they take enough of those to defend themselves against our own weapons that the Taliban might have? Are they arming themselves? Are they securing that area?
At the moment, I don't know. At the moment,
okay.
I don't know the answers to any of that.
That's what I'd be doing. there is so much out there now. That'd be. See, this is fascinating. It's almost like the quote war in Afghanistan was for the soldiers acted for nothing. But I'm just saying that the whatever the stated goals were died out long ago, and we were just there fighting. I'm not sure who we were fighting or what we were doing, and the Taliban was just waiting for us to leave so they could take over again, which we all knew was going to happen. And now the groups are it was like a pause was put on the whole country for 20 years, and now it's going back to whatever was happening in the 1990s is now going to pick up where they left off. Is that a fair assessment?
In many ways, I think that's true, yes.
Okay. Which means we shouldn't be in the business of going to other countries and trying to make them, American. I still remember this famous line from, The Last of the Mohicans, when this British officer says, I thought our policy was make the world England. Well, what kind of arrogance is that? It's like, well, we're trying to make, Afghanistan, Minnesota. It's not going to work. It's just
maybe
not going to work.
Maybe Minnesota's not the best example, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking Democrat state, it's this idea, this arrogance, this lack of understanding
of
any other people.
Well, it's a lack of understanding of who and what the Afghan people really are.
Yeah.
And they will never, ever be Westerners, which is why the Taliban was able to succeed in the end. And who are the Taliban? They're the husbands, fathers, sons, and brothers of the Afghan people. That's who they are. They're not little green men that parachuted in from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
They did not invade the country, unless you mean from Pakistan, some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
They are of the Afghan people. What percentage, I do not know. Maybe a smaller percentage, but maybe a larger one. So our national security, our core compelling national security in Afghanistan is to prevent it from coalescing once again as a base for Islamic terror outside of the country, outside of Afghanistan, against us, against any of our friends partners or allies.
But that should be our policy. We only have a minute left. That should be our policy with every country over there, to not allow them to be bases. But wouldn't we be better served with special operations taking out those bases but not trying to change the whole country?
Should have done that a long time ago.
Yeah.
Don't know why
okay.
those warlords still walk the earth.
I just want to make a comment, and that has to do with why we were over there. So many times I heard people say because they wanted to promote women's rights as far as get women to be able to go to school and do different things, drive. And by departing how they did, to me it's like everything they said about that was a falsehood too, because now, I mean, women's rights are going to go down, you know, being able to drive and all that stuff. I can't see that remaining. And I think with the Taliban there, I think they're going to be even treated less or worse.
Got less than a
when
minute,
you write,
Corey, yeah.
When you write a constitution whose first three articles, that's all you have to read, the first three articles, put the country under Islamic law, and no law may be promulgated that is in opposition to Sharia. End of story. There are no women's rights under Sharia.
Yeah.
Period, full stop. We wrote that constitution. Our Department of State wrote that constitution.
Maybe we should go through those three sections next week. I think it would be fascinating to I'll take a look at it myself. But that might be something interesting to sort of go over and just see how bad it is. Because you're the only person that said that. Nobody else knows this. You know, you're the one source that is actually really explaining this in ways and having us look in directions that no one else is talking about. And this is why I appreciate having you on the show so much. We're actually out of time now.
In English, online. All you have to do is read Articles 1, 2, and 3. Number 1, Afghanistan shall be an Islamic Republic. Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. Number 2. The law of the land shall be Islamic law. Number 3, there shall be no law promulgated that is in opposition to Sharia. That's all you have to read. Those are the first three articles of the Afghan Constitution written by the United States Department of State in 2004.
Yeah, I'm going to read that myself. I want to talk about that next week. And contrast that with what MacArthur did in Japan, totally giving a proper constitution, and look at Japan now as opposed to giving a Sharia constitution. It guaranteed that things are going to be exactly as they are now. Unfortunately, we have to go. We are literally out of time. The clock has even stopped. Claire, thank you so much. Gene, thank you. Let's do it again next week. This is Greg Klinglis for Action
thank
Radio
you.
At blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time. Thanks, Claire. Thanks, Gene.
Okay, thank you, Greg. All right.
Bye-bye. Bye now.